is the Saturday Supplement. I'm Frank Lewis. Today, Sean Lyons is taking us to his special places in and around Tralee. A Mayo man living in Tralee since 1995. A teacher in Dublin, Zambia, Australia and Tralee. MC, raconteur, writer, including a new book of memoirs of his. Chair of Tralee International Resource Centre and Kerry Cancer Support Group. This programme is recorded on the 7th of February. For use in later programmes, your story and Sean or his special places. Write Frank Lewis, Gillon, Mangerton Road, Muckross, Killarney. Email franklewismangerton@gmail.com. Text 083 300 3300 or 1066 712 3666. In this first hour,
in Radio Kerry with Mikey O'Donnell, before sunrise on a Sunday morning, a story about a car that didn't have a steering wheel.
At the Kerry School of Music with Grania O'Carroll, as a 4 or 5 year old dismissing renowned soprano Miriam Murphy.
In Kerry Museum, my story, anticipation and disappointment with the Roses dresses, for personal reasons.
And we begin in St John's Church of Ireland, where the meeting of Dick Spring and Yasser Arafat is remembered. And four more of Sean's special places from 10 to 11, helped again by 13-year-old granddaughter Sarah Ryan. We're outside St John's Church of Ireland, where Sean has emceed an event, spoken at a service, is impressed by the history and interviewed a newly appointed bishop. We're joined by David Tough, a member of the Church of Ireland community, who helps with the history and tourism projects here. David, a Middle Eastern connection with the church.
Dick Spring, when he was Minister for Foreign Affairs, on his trips to the Middle East and the peace process, was given a gift by Yasser Arafat, who was leader of the PLO at the time. The gift is a depiction of the Last Supper in Mother of Pearl, and Dick very kindly gifted this to the church for safekeeping.
It's here for anybody to come in and look at it. Sean.
I've emceed quite a few events here. One particular one, there was a choir from East Belfast, actually the Harland and Wolfe Presbyterian Choirs. And afterwards we were chatting and one of them asked me, what time is worship in the morning? Yeah. And I said to him, well, my Sunday morning routine is now I go to the Irish Language Mass just down the road in the Catholic Church. And then I go for a swim in Finet. And this is in November. And I said, can I interest you in either? He said, no.
David Chocantullis, the House of Light. Tell me the story.
Chocantullis is the parish centre beside us here. The Church of St John the Evangelist that were here outside. Back in the old days, Big River ran down Ash Street. You wouldn't have come in those ornate gates that we see behind us. So they hung a lantern up on the tower. There wasn't street lighting in those days, and the lantern guided people out from the town so they wouldn't fall in the river. The church became known as Chample and Solace at the Church of the Light. Mm-hmm. And when we built the parish centre then, in more recent times, we called it Chock and Solace, the House of the Light.
They're magnificent gates.
Yes, those gates, they came from the Talbot Crosby estate in Ardfert. They were donated in 1954, and I think the Talbot Crosbys had been there from the 1550s to 1950.
Wonderful, wonderful. Sean, that experience of speaking at a service.
Reverend Jim invited me to speak at the Harvest service, and it was a huge honour, you know, to be invited to speak publicly anywhere is an honour, but to be invited in a place that I find so special or in any sacred place like this. I told a story which, as you mentioned, I have a book of memoirs at the moment, and I told a story of redemption, if you like, where I was lost in Africa. I was lost in Zambia. I was in danger. My life was in danger. And I was actually rescued by a prostitute, a streetwalker. It led on to me at last, probably in my life, realising that we should never judge, that if somebody who would be condemned as the lowest of the low, you know, a streetworker in the Copper Belt in Zambia, mm-hmm. was prepared to reach out and save my life, then I feel, you know, that we have absolutely no right whatsoever to make a judgment on people for what they do, for what they look like or where they live.
In speaking in the Church of Ireland, was there anything that you felt you shouldn't mention or anything you felt you should mention?
My very first few sentences were, I'll have to be very honest here, and I want to tell you all, for those of you that don't know, I am not from Kerry.
You didn't mention any religious affiliation. As a Mayo man, did the crowd then sympathise with you?
Well, I wasn't cast out of the temple, shall we say. No, they were a wonderful, warm, receptive congregation. And said, I've been at quite a few events in the church, and I always leave there feeling, you know, this is I'm part of a community of faith, you know, regardless of, you know, which God is being worshipped. I think the community of faith is so important.
David, was there any feeling as a member of the community, I mean, having somebody who's of another church coming and speaking at a service, is that unusual or?
Oh, not at all, no. The Church of Ireland is open to everyone, and we have people from all over, many different countries come and worship here. We must remember that even though we're talking about the history of the church here, it is primarily a place of worship. You know, everyone is welcome.
Yeah, yeah. And there was no reservation that Sean might speak some heresy or something like that, no?
Well, if they accept me as a Dublin man, I think they'll accept Sean.
A Mayo man is all right.
A Mayo man is all right.
There's so much history here.
In the early days of the Knights Hospitaller, when they came here some 800 years ago in the 1200s, and they would have built a church somewhere in this area. And that's a great heritage to have, I mean, for the whole community, that Christian worship has been going on here for some 800 years. And then this church, in all its reincarnations over the years, has kept that going. I think St. John's is probably one of the oldest buildings in continuous use in Tralee.
You had two very unusual Bibles here.
Yes, I suppose the most historical one would be the Denny Bible, which belonged to the Denny family. They resided, of course, in the castle, which is long gone now, and they were there from the 1500s for many years. The Denny family Bible was 1639, and it has gone to the museum now for curation. But it's one of the oldest family Bibles in the English language. Yeah. And then we have the Kitchener Bible, not a significant Bible in itself, but belonged to a man called Lord Kitchener, born in North Kerry, I understand, and it came to this church from Kilflynn Church when it closed.
Yeah. The man associated with the World War One posters,
Your Country Needs You.
I grew up in Castlebar in the 50s, 60s. There was a very, very small Church of Ireland population there. There was maybe two families that I could name. We were forbidden from entering the Protestant church. And some of the local gurriers used to run in and ring the bell at the. But we were told that they were risking their eternal souls. Like that was the divide. So it's so refreshing to be able to listen to David saying, you know, everybody's welcome, just come in. The vicar, the pastor in Castlebar for years, was a man, Reverend Gahan, and Reverend Vaughan, sorry, Austin Gahan. And he was regarded as quite the eccentric, you know. Everybody had great time for him. He used to call into my mother's shop and chat away, you know, very, very English. And he walked with a stick. And I only learned many years later he had actually parachuted into Normandy on D-Day and was injured, and hence the stick. But, you know, we just regarded him as this eccentric English Protestant, you know, but he obviously got such a story that we never heard.
But isn't that the amazing thing, that there is so much history around about us that we're not aware of?
It's true, it's true.
One of the stories we like to tell is the connection with the Rose of Tralee Festival, which is a big part of our services during the year, and we welcome the Roses and their entourages and all the civic people from the town. William Pembroke Munchilnock, who wrote the original ballad on which the Rose of Tralee is based, his parents are buried here just behind us in the graveyard. We're not sure if William himself is buried there.
You interviewed the new bishop.
It was part of the Horizons programme, in which I had a lot of experiences and a lot of fun. But there was a new bishop consecrated, and it was his first visit to this church. The Church of Ireland Bishop of Limerick, the diocese he covers is absolutely vast. There's about 12 different names on it. Yeah. What came out of that, interestingly, he was talking about a project that they were doing in Africa. The diocese was raising funds for a project in Africa. Yeah. And later, in a sponsored walk that I had in Holy Family, we donated money to that as a direct result of the interview. And I got the most beautiful letter back from the bishop saying, you know, to get a donation from such an unexpected and surprising and welcome source meant so, so much to him.
Just next door, right today, in Chalk and Sullis, Tralee Soup Kitchen, which is an independent organisation but has a parish connection,
And is that something happens every...
Every Saturday. And they'll be feeding 70 or 80 local people, no questions asked, people who need to have a hot meal.
David, thanks indeed for talking to us.
Thank you for the opportunity, and it's great to have St. John's highlighted. Thank you.
Through the valley the pale rays were shedding when I won the heart of the rose of Folly.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shop and Seafood Bar, the Mall Tralee. Treat yourself to the freshest takeaway fish and chips today, right in the heart of Tralee.
The moon through the valley, the pale rays were shedding when I won the heart of the rose of Tralee.
Today, Sean Lyons is taking us to his special places in and around Tralee. Now we're in Studio 3 in Radio Kerry, where we're joined by Mikey O'Donnell, chimney sweep by day, and then raconteur, MC, Tralee Town tour guide. For me, memories of early morning walk-arounds, Tralee, that when they were broadcast had my mother on edge that I would cause divorce in the O'Donnell house. The man who arranged our fellow walkers, Mikey...
Frank Hennessy. One favourite story of his was around Christmas time that he was... We were dancing in the CY, and that he was with me, you know. So he went to the tile, and that time you had to cross the floor, you see, and pass in all the ladies going into the bathrooms in the CYMS in Tralee. And Frank, as he was coming out, he said he'd heard two girls discussing me as a prospect, you see. So one girl said to the other, "Would you kiss Mikey O'Donnell under the mistletoe?" And the other girl said, "I wouldn't kiss him under anaesthetic."
Sean.
In this very studio, I used to do the Horizons programme live on a Sunday morning. And I'd bring in guests. And I brought in Frank one day, and we talk about faith and life and so on. And I'd have the the missalette, and I'd have the guests to read the gospel, and then we'd talk about it. And Frank was here on the morning, going live, and the gospel was about, you know, what God has put together, let no man tear asunder. And Frank read it, and I said, "So what would your first reflection be on that now, Frank?" And he said, "Well, you know, I'm divorced." My father worked in the bacon factory for 50 years, about the clock out, and everybody, all the men, usually men, lining up for the clock out. And like the Castlebar Bacon Company fed half the town, same as Denny's fed half the town here by contraband. And some man had about 3 pounds of sausages, the links, wrapped around his waist. And the queue for the clock, he began to sweat under the coat. And the sausages began to slip one by one down the leg of his trousers. And eventually the entire £3.48 links that had spooled out onto the floor just as one of the managers was passing by. You know? And the man who turned around and says, "Who's throwing the sausages?"
Frank's stories about the bacon factory.
Bracker Regan had two brothers there. One of them was sitting inside, and he was working the house where the spices were, you know, and... the back of the co-op's like mixing the spices through the sausages and stuff like that. He was inside reading the paper, and Paul was the manager, Mr. Paul, and he came in. And he said, "What are you doing there?" "Well," he said, "I'm thinking of doing number 3 in the 4 o'clock race." And another great story Frank used to tell. There was a fellow living in Tralee one time by the name of Governor Quirk. Bracker Regan's brother had borrowed 2 shillings off him at one stage. And Governor Quirk went away to fight in the Spanish Civil War. Word came back anyway that he was killed. Gerald Quirk was killed in Spain somewhere. And Bracker's brother was in an awful state about his 2 shillings that he owed him, you know. He was wondering what his quandary was, you know. So some fella said, "Look, go down to Dominicans and have a couple of masses said." "Fine," he said, "I'll do that." So he went down. He had a couple of masses said below with the 2 shillings. Eventually the war was over, and who arrived back but the Governor Quirk, like. So he met him in the street, and he said, "Jesus, Governor, we thought you were killed." He says, "About that 2 shillings, he says, there's 2 masses coming to you below the Dominicans."
The memory that does make me wake up in a sweat is that time we were doing the papers here, Mike, and there was a particular business development in town. It was mentioned in the paper, and Mikey said, "Oh, sure, everybody knows that giving a name got a big..." brown envelope. I think it was Tressa that was producing the programme. She came running in. She nearly came through the window there. Take that back. Take that back.
Mikey, another sidekick of both of you that should be mentioned is, of course, Celine Slattery. I remember her telling me a story one time, things have become so right now, and she was saying, you know, she said, when I was working at the county council, she said, if you were going up the stairs and somebody didn't pinch your arse, you'd wonder what was wrong with you. Sean Horizons, the church, the religion programme.
I remember Bill Kirby, God rest him, was in reading the gospel for me. I asked him, you know, afterwards, I said, just before we go to the break now, have you any reflections on the... on the gospel. He said, no, but I have a number of prizes here now that we can have lunch for two at Kirby's Brogan.
Mikey, do you remember one of those pre-sunrise Sunday morning walks around Tralee? We were standing outside Ryle and Nolan, and Willie Ryle was telling us about a long evening in the Grand Hotel and getting into the car.
There was a Frank Kelly, who was a friend of your father's, walked. He was the manager of Lines at that time. It was the time when there was drink driving was... unheard of. Our drink driving was almost essential, you know, if you wanted to get home, yes. So over-driving was a thing that wasn't mentioned at all. Frank Kelly apparently was a man of few words. Uh-huh. That's all you get out of him, you know. So he was inside in the Grand Hotel with a fellow by the name of McLaughlin, who was married to an aunt of Willie's. He was I think he was the town rate collector. They were inside in the bar in the Grand Hotel, and the car was parked up in the footpath outside the Grand, you see. Abandoned, if you like, you know, yeah. So... they came out anyway after they finished, and they sat in, and McLaughlin was driving. Kelly sat in alongside him, and they looked around. And, look, Frank, he said. Uh-huh, says Frank. Steering wheel is gone. You know, no steering wheel in the car. So they were looking around, and they were perplexed. And next thing, some fellow was passing, and they called him. Mick, come here, look, have a look at this. Someone stole the steering wheel of the car, and Mick looked in, anyway, and he said, you know, he said, it might help if you got into the front of the car instead of the...
Sean, sitting in for a week of Kerry Today, very much in contrast with your other radio commitments.
Very much, and some very serious things happened at the time. There was a particular minister who shall remain nameless, again interviewing him live. Something had happened in the constituency. He hadn't come out very well out of it, and I was asking him about it. He just kept talking around the issue. And again, Tressa, who's brilliant at the producing and the interviewing and the whole lot, I heard her shouting into the earphones, he's bluffing, ask him again.
Mikey, a story that sums up Sean Lyons for you.
Sean might ring me and say, look, will you be down such a place? And I'd say what it's about, and he'd tell me what it was about, and particularly the St. Patrick's Day parade we did for years and years and years. And Sean would go on the stand, and he'd have a list of who the exhibits were, you know, coming down. And my job was down the ground. I ad-libbed, which is not a great idea, Frank, you know, if you want to get things right. He'd name the crowd coming, whatever it was, the 1st Battalion of the FCA. That would be our rehearsal, like, with 5 minutes on the phone.
You mentioned St. Patrick's Day, Mike. The first St. Patrick's Day parade we were involved with, myself and yourself and Frank Hennessy, we actually took part in the parade. We were the X Factor. I was Louis Welch. You were... Simon Cowell, and who was the woman that was in the first X Factor judges? But Frank was dressed up as her, and she was pregnant at the time. So we had Frank had a doll, and we were running up and down the parade and talking to people and so on. And just when we got to the reviewing stand, Frank lifted up the skirt and pulled out the doll and threw it up.
We were coming down one time, Frank, and Sean said, after our usual rehearsal, the FCA band were coming down. The usual suspects were always there. And they had been going, they had been taking part in the parade for 50 years, Frank, since the 50s, you know. Yeah. I mean, we were only there for a few years until they kind of cottoned on to us. Always up near the front was Martin Duggan. He's only passed away a few months ago. He was from Ballonic Estate. Lovely guy, like. But Martin was in the front line of the, after the, we'll say the officers, Martin was in the next line. And in the interim period between that year and the previous year, they had changed the name to the LDF, you see. Now, Sean was aware of this because Sean had a list, you see. And so when they were coming down, Sean said, here we have now the colour party, LDF, 1st Battalion, whatever it was. And as they came close to me, I said, here we have the FCA. And Martin was marching past, and he said, it's the LDF, you bollocks. Ha ha ha!
My father was in the LDF during the emergency. There was some event on in Castlebar, I think it was 1948, the time of the Republic. There was a parade and De Valera was on the reviewing stand. All the orders, they were told, had to be given in Irish because of Dev. And whoever was the sergeant, anyways, he couldn't remember Sula Clay, eyes left. And they were marching down towards the reviewing stand. And the poor sergeant, he was sweating bullets, you know, trying to think. But there was a guy from the bacon factory called Darky Flynn who happened to be standing beside the reviewing stand. And the sergeant, as he got closer, says, "Look at Darky." So everybody turned left in unison to great discipline. I'm sure Dev was very impressed at the skill and the discipline.
Mikey, thanks for talking to us. Through the valley the pale rays were shedding when I won the heart of the rose of
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's The Mad Monk in Killarney. Serving the finest seafood in a cosy modern atmosphere. Book your special experience today at seafoodbar.ie. The moon through the valley, the pale rays were shedding when I won the heart of the rose of Folly.
In our quest to Sean Lyons' special places in Tralee and surrounds, we're now in Kerry County Museum. In fact, we're in the special exhibition on Roger Casement in the Ash Memorial Hall. And we're joined by my granddaughter, 13-year-old Sarah Ryan, with us today, helping with the lifting, Siobhan, after her recent heart surgery. And myself, after my back surgery last May, need help with any heavy lifting. But Sarah is also a huge fan of Kerry County Museum. Sean,
I love bringing kids to living exhibitions, as it were. I love history. I love local history. I love international history. And to bring the lads down here and let them experience, you know, the reality of what it was like in medieval times, in 1916, Casement's time, Tom Crean, all of that. You know, you can talk about all of these things in a classroom and show pictures, but when you bring them down here and just walk around, it brings the whole thing to life. Yeah. One particular memory I had... A young boy in the class, lovely, lovely young man, knew his parents well, but the poor man, he had a very negative outlook on life. Nothing cheered him up. And in this exhibition here where we are, there's the handgun that Patrick Pearce used in 1916. And I showed it to him and I said, "Do you realise now, Michael, that is the very gun that Patrick Pearce wore on his hip in 1916. And he looked at it and he looked at me and he said, "There's no bullets in it." Casement and Tom Crean particularly, they're two figures in history that I didn't really appreciate until I came to Kerry. Tom Crean, I knew absolutely nothing about. And then to hear about him afterwards, and I had the pleasure of being on your show, Frank, when it was Michael Smith was launching the book.
That's right, yeah.
And that was revelatory for me. I mean, amazing. I've been absolutely fascinated by Tom Crean ever since.
Yeah.
And similarly with Casement, I've done a lot of work all over the world with human rights. As far as I'm concerned, Roger Casement was the father of human rights, the work that he did in Brazil and the Congo.
Sarah, your memory of visiting medieval Tralee, as it was called.
I went in with my friend one day and we went and we put on the costumes as if we were knights going through the medieval town.
Yeah.
And we had the swords and the shields and the armour. And we would walk through and we would be hearing all the old things.
The sounds of Tralee, it was a very noisy place, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was lots of different things going on. Like, of course, there was the trading and the selling and the buying of all the stuff like the fish and everything.
Yeah.
And all the, like, statues are really cool as well, there.
And do you remember what age you were when you went there first?
I'd say I might have been about 8.
Shortly after it was first published, as you said, Sean, I devoted a whole Saturday supplement with author Michael Smith on Unsung Hero, his groundbreaking book on Tom Crean that really introduced Tom Crean to all of us. And a number of times had Aidan Dooley with excerpts from his one-man show based on the book. Sean, the museum had one of the great exhibitions on Crean. I mean, is there a Crean story that stands out for you?
It's one that I heard on the radio, Tom Crean's granddaughters, or maybe it was Enda, his grandson, telling the story about one Good Friday over in the pub, and there were men working on the railway or the roads outside, and it was a bitterly cold day. Tom Crean took pity on them and brought them inside and cooked up the full Irish breakfast for them on Good Friday morning. And his mother came down and says, "Do you realise what day it is? It's a day of fast and abstinence." And Tom's reply was, "Where I came from, ma'am," he said, "you'd cut some skin off a dead man's arse and cook it up whatever day of the week it was."
Sarah, what was it about visiting the Roses' dresses and hearing the Roses speak about their dresses here in the museum?
My grandfather, you wouldn't know him, was the escort to the winning Rose one of the years. So we went to see her dress. Now, my personal opinion of the dress, well,
be careful.
Just say it wasn't my favourite one. But yeah, there were so many beautiful dresses there. And hearing some of the old Rosa Tralee speak, it was really cool.
Sean, Roger Casement, the South American story is still one that isn't widely known in this country.
Agreed. And, you know, we mentioned when we were talking to Mike O'Donnell about Sailing Slattery, like Sailing's father met Roger Casement in South America. They were both in the IRB. Sailing's dad was working there and Casement came. They met as IRB members, which is an incredible thing. And in terms of his human rights, I'm just looking at one of the quotations up here, a letter he wrote to Alice Stopford. It says, "I realised then that I was looking at this tragedy with the eyes of another race, of a people once hunted themselves. And I said to myself there, far up the Lalonga River, that I would do my part as an Irishman, wherever it might lead me to personally." And that strikes a chord with me because I am chair of the Tralee International Resource Centre, so we work a lot with asylum seekers and refugees, and I wouldn't put myself in the same, I happen to be in the same room as Casement, but I certainly wouldn't be fit to lace his shoes. But I think we should all do our part as Irish men and Irish women, you know, considering our own history. We should all be prepared to do our part.
Sarah, tell me about visiting medieval Tralee at Christmas.
We would go into one of the old medieval houses and then Santa was sitting on the chair. We would go, we would get a picture, and then he would give me my present. And then we went and we met Mrs. Claus as well, which is something you don't get in some Santa experiences. And she gave us lovely gingerbread cookies, and it was just such a lovely experience.
And one of the things, I know you've mentioned it a couple of times to me, you know, the way the staff looked after you here, the way they helped and showed you things and brought you places and helped in all sorts of ways was made it a memorable experience.
Yeah, like even for like children or teenagers coming in here, like, they give you a booklet, even if it's just a normal day. Sometimes it's themed if there's a holiday, but if it's a normal day, they would give you a booklet and a pen, like just to get the kids involved with like all of the different exhibits and everything.
You went to a summer camp here, didn't you? Do you remember that?
I did. I don't really remember that too much, but we did a lot like in the excavating section, and like it was just really cool being able to like dig up all the bones and all that.
Yeah, yeah. Sean, Kerry County Museum has told aspects of the story of Kerry with a unique level of authenticity and visual effectiveness, hasn't it? I mean, on parallel, there's nothing else like it in the county of this kind.
I don't believe so. It's magnificent and it's so well curated and the staff are so informed. But can I just say on Sarah's story, when we came to town first, we actually brought our son to see Santa Claus here. And Santi, for some reason, had a northern accent. And I was telling my son, "You're a very good boy and you've got a nice mommy and daddy." And then we went up to Mayo and we went into Brafey House to see Santi, and Santi had the broadest Mayo accent. He said, "I can't get the reindeers to stir. They're abroad in the field outside and they won't budge for me." So we had to explain to Colin that Santa Claus adopts the accent of wherever he happens to be.
Here in the museum, searching the exhibits for leprechauns around St. Patrick's Day.
A very different experience again. So they would give you a leprechaun booklet where you would try and find different leprechauns in different exhibits throughout the museum. And they'd be like in the cases with all the artifacts. It was really cool. And when you found one, you were just like, oh my gosh, like it's on the old gun or it's like in an old pot. It's like really cool.
Yeah.
Like,
It's one of the great things, one of the great challenges, isn't it, Sean, to be able to bring the story of Kerry, present, past and future, to life. And this museum has done it uniquely in all sorts of ways.
It has, and I've seen it myself with the numerous kids that we've brought along. I've brought along students from the MTU. I used to teach up there, the students from the Middle East. I used to teach them Irish history and culture, and we'd come down here. And it's just so informative from the earliest days. And you follow the trail all the way through, right through, as Sarah has spoken so eloquently there about the medieval experience, and then to come up here and see, you know, the history of the 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th century. It's an amazing place, well worth a visit. It's so educational. I draw a discreet veil over the exhibition of Kerry football. I move on to more pleasant things like the execution of the 1916 leaders.
You want them to send that to Mayo for a while. Maybe it might have an influence.
It might be no harm. I was actually up at home there recently, and there was having a meal in a restaurant, and the man serving me was actually from Tralee. And I said, God, I'll be coming up again in a few weeks here now. Do you want me to bring up anything? He said, you might bring up a few medals.
Fantastic. Sarah, thank you very much. You're very good.
When I won the heart of the Rose of Tralee.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across the county. Serving the freshest seafood to Kerry families since 1963.
The moon through the valley of pale rays were shedding. When I won the heart of the Rose of
Today on the trail of Sean Lyons' special places in and around Tralee. This programme was recorded on February the 7th. For future programmes, your story on Sean or his special places. Text 083 300 3300 or phone 066 7123666. We're now in the Kerry School of Music, where we're joined by the, since July, the director of the school, Grania O'Carroll, who also teaches piano, voice, musical theatre, trumpet, French horn, trombone and musical theory. Grania, a youth production of the musical Sweeney Todd set in a psychiatric hospital, or a lunatic asylum as it would have been called in the 19th and much of the 20th century. You had the lead and Sean had a part as one of the workers. Sean made a particular impact.
Yes, it's my first memory of Sean. We were down rehearsing the scene, which is Fogg's Asylum. A bunch of teenagers, basically, and myself. Sean got up and kind of gave us a real insight into lunatic asylums, but also mental health facilities, his experience of them. And I just remember the room going completely still. And this was, you know, teenagers who wouldn't listen to me or anybody else. But when Sean got up and spoke, I just remember everybody sitting, listening to this. And it always had kind of a bit of an impact on me because, and it's always why I love having Sean involved, because he'll always be there with a bit of an insight, a bit of a story, a bit of a joke, and everything.
Sean, your debut in a singing part in the Little Shop of Horrors.
It was a challenge for the orchestra, it was a challenge for Aidan O'Carroll, and it was a challenge for Grania, it was a challenge for the audience, because I had never, ever sung in public in a formal sense before. I had stood and managed the table at 3 o'clock in the morning and belted out a few rebel songs, but to actually stand on stage in Sheamsa. Grania, and one of the reasons I admire her, and she knows how much I respect her, is she has a great way of instilling belief in people. She convinced me that I could do it. Her father, Aidan, was charged then with getting me to actually sing the songs. When we started, the man had a full head of, grey, of black hair. But by the time we finished, he was gone grey. He was persistent, like Grania, like he's a great teacher. I was singing, and I use the word very advisedly, with Jack Healy. And Jack was so supportive as well. I started off, I think I had 5 songs. But as the rehearsals went on, the songs were being chipped away. And I remember one Sunday, I was down to 2 songs. Grania came over to me, and most apologetic and very embarrassed, and said, I was just wondering, that song there that we sing outside the shop, if I give that to one of the...
And this didn't affect you at all?
I threw my arms around her and I said, thank you, thank you, thank you. And she says, well, bless you. She said, I was awake half the night wondering how I was going to approach this.
And appropriately, as you're hearing in the background, we're in a school of music, so we're hearing music. Grainne, you don't remember a time when the Kerry School of Music was not a part of your life. From the age of 6 months you were in the school, right through school years you came here with your sister after school. You did your homework. The school founder, your dad, Aidan, tells a story of when you were, was it 4 or 5?
Yeah, we had the late great Miriam Murphy, who went up through the school and was a great family friend. She was down rehearsing for something, and often Dad would, you know, play piano with her, and they'd work it out together. And I, as I was prone to do, was sitting under the piano, listening to them. And apparently, I was giving Miriam this look, and I turned around and I said, "Would you ever stop? You're giving me a pain in my headache."
Sean, you say Kerry School of Music has given the gift of music to so many throughout the county. It should be celebrated.
My daughter studied piano and the concertina here, and she's gone on and she's working full-time in theatre now. I would say it's in the thousands, the number of past pupils from here.
Grainne, you directed the Light Opera Society of Tralee production.
We're doing a variety show this March, so I was looking back on the one that we did 3 years ago, and I saw a picture of a group of boys, and I said, God, who is that? And I sent it into our choreographer and our friend, all our my friends, and they said, God, that's Jamie. And Jamie, in 3 short years, then just played Tony, the lead man, in our West Side Story this summer. And it just shows, I mean, I don't even think he had a solo line in that production, but I remember him, and he was kind of fresh. He hadn't done theatre for years, I don't think, was fresh into it. And then the next year, I think he might have had one line. Then I saw, okay, well, he's a good dancer. And then just like that, and you can see how their confidence grows. Another example is, you know, Marcus, yeah, who we've done many a show with. When Marcus first came to us, he was about 16 years old. He had one line and he was fretting about it, and now you wouldn't find a better voice than Kerry.
So are you saying there's still hope for Sean Lyles?
Oh yes. Just maybe, and what was that now? Marcus is about 10 years, so maybe 10 years time.
Sean, your memoir that was published late last year.
One of the great pleasures for any teacher, well, and I'm sure Grainne would be the same, is when you see somebody going on to success. And certainly from my teaching career here in Tralee, in the primary school just around the corner, David Moran went on to All-Ireland glory. Mm-hmm. No thanks to the skills I taught him in fifth class. He probably had to unlearn rather than otherwise. Another young man around the same time was Noel O'Regan. Noel has gone on to be a very highly respected author, and he told a lovely story in one of his interviews how when he was in my class, I used to make them look out the window before they started writing, and I pointed over to the mountains and spoke about Scotia's grave and so on, and Noel said something to the effect, like, I always thought they were just mountains. But I'm a great believer in Brian McMahon's the Windows of Wonder. I think that's the job we have as teachers, isn't it, Grainne? You know, to open up the windows of wonders, the windows of wonder for every child, whether it's in writing, in music, in football.
Yeah,
maybe I contributed in some small way to Mayo still waiting.
We won't mention that.
David's
again.
Fielding skills that I taught him.
Grainne, in 2024, back in Tralee after 8 years in Dublin, working closely with your father, Aidan. Last July, as I mentioned earlier, you took over from Aidan as the director of the school, now marking 45 years. How would you like to mark all of that?
We actually are putting on a night in Shimsa on the 28th of November, and that is going to be a kind of night of celebration. We're hoping to have past students, you know, we have so many successes, Paula Murray, Kenneth Rice, so many, and coming back and really celebrate not just the school, but my father's work, which I think everybody would agree is unbelievable. So we hope to be performing a lot of his works and things like that. The school has competed there in the weekend, the Ennis Choral Festival. We're heading off to Valencia, Spain next Saturday, 35 of us. So it's just about having a year of just, you know, celebrating. Not many music schools make it to 45 years, and hopefully another 45 at least under me.
Sean, Kerry School of Music, as you said, has given the gift of music to so many people throughout the county, and it should be celebrated. How would you like to see it celebrated?
I'd like to see it celebrated in terms of recognition. We've had this thing in Ireland for so many years of Irish was grand, was all right kind of thing. But I think it's time we moved on now and started recognising what's important and recognise success and recognise achievement. And certainly any time I come into this building, and like we hear now in the background, you know, somebody playing a tune, we'll be walking out, there'll be, you know, young kids doing ballet, there'll be people playing violin, there'll be people singing. I think that should be recognised in some way. I remember... It was the, must have been the 25th anniversary I was doing the arts programme, and we had a session inside in Studio 3 where we were earlier. And I'd love to see, you know, recognition via the council or via the Department of Arts or whomever to recognise that the spirit of music and the spirit of song and the spirit of the arts was kept alive here in Kerry, yeah, very much on the efforts of one man and one family. And I'd love to see it being recognised nationally even.
Indeed. Grainne, you were telling us just before we started to record that during your years in Dublin you were involved with the Artain Boys Band.
Yeah. My 4 years there were some of the best years I had in Dublin. To go away, to come back, teaches you so much. The way that it was run, I was particularly working with the intro to band, which is before they get their suits and their everything, and that's kind of maybe 8-year-olds. And then I was working a lot with the music theory of them. And it was just such a well-run school. Ronan O'Reilly, who is the director there, he just led by example the whole time. And it was, I just felt like I learned a lot to come home and, you know, bring it to the school here.
Indeed. Grainne, thank you for talking with me. Every luck and success over the next 45 years. We're going to a break at the 10 o'clock news, and we'll be back to another of Sean Lyons' special places after the news. And to play us out, Kevin Horgan from Carrasaveen, who has been a student in the Kerry School of Music for a year. And here he's playing the Verses by Chopin.
Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by the new family fish box at Quinlan's Seafood Bars. Packed with golden fish goujons, fresh squid, delicious prawns and tasty homemade chips. Order yours to take away today.
The moon through the valley of the rays were shedding when I won the heart of the rose of folly.
Welcome back. Today, Sean Lyons is taking us to his special places in and around Tralee. This programme was recorded on February the 7th. For use in later programmes, your story on Sean or his special places, write Frank Lewis, Gillon, Mangerton Road, Muckross, Killarney. Email franklewismangerton@gmail.com. Text 083-300-3300 or phone 066-712-3666. In this next hour, we will be...
on the Tralee Ship Canal with Noel Mulligan, fighting an invasive alien species.
On the Greenway in Phoenix with Mike O'Neill, on the impact of the Greenway and Sean's 10,000 kilometres on his electric bike.
On the Cancer Bus with Breatha Deland, 8,000 journeys last year and raising €300,000 every year. How individual lives are affected.
And to begin this hour, we're at the Rose Hotel, joined by General Manager Mark Sullivan, standing by a famous bookcase
purchased by Dick and Eileen Hengler back 11 years ago. But the bookcase here originated up in Collisan's house, and it then was purchased by Belluna Convent. Now in the Kerry Suite here at the Rose Hotel, and it adorns this wonderful room where actually my great friend here, Sean Lyons, we did all our literary evenings here.
Sean, your literary evenings.
We had Donal Ryan, one of our foremost authors. We've had Carmel Harrington has been here, and Stephen James Smith has been here, Kerry O'Brien, the poet.
Mark, Holocaust survivor Tommy Reichenthal.
He survived Bergen-Belsen, which was something else. He lost up to 35 relatives within the concentration camps. He said nothing for 60 odd years, and then in 2003 he started to share his story because he didn't want this to be forgotten, what he had gone through, the starvation, the malnutrition, the torture, just the general brutality of these concentration camps. We had something like 120 chairs out. There was over 200 people showed up that night. So it was the biggest attendance we had.
Sean, you're a romantic.
I honestly think that the story of the original Rose of Tralee is one of the world's great love stories. The idea of, Mary, this humble daughter of the woman working in the house, and then going to the big house, the man falling in love with her, she falling in love with him, the family moving him up to Galway to remove the temptation or whatever. He came back, getting involved in the politics and having to leave Kerry under a cloud, and years later coming back. And I think that moment in the story where he's having lunch and the innkeeper closes the curtains while the funeral is passing by and tells him that's Mary O'Connor's funeral. I think that's one of the most poignant moments of storytelling and romance that I've ever heard.
Indeed. Mark, you became general manager here with Dick and Eileen Hengler when they bought and rebranded the business.
Dick and Eileen, with Dorothy, their daughter, was a Washington DC Rose in 2011, and Dorothy passed away then in 2014. They then purchased a hotel in 2015, but they always saw it not alone an investment, but they felt that tourism Kerry was so strong. They had a love through Eileen, is obviously from Killarney. They did the tour with the Roses. They really felt in love with Tralee and the story of the Rose of Tralee, yeah. And they felt this would be a great home from home for everybody, be it Roses, former Roses, but also the people of Tralee, the people of Kerry. This time 10 years ago, this was a building site, yeah. The room you were in, this particular room, and the whole hotel. We reopened the hotel then on around the 18th. We missed Patrick's Day deadline. Since then, it has been a constant reinvestment into the hotel with them. Currently finishing off a 70-bedroom refurbishment programme. That'll be finished by the end of February. But the stuff that has gone on in this hotel, that bar here, which is obviously named after Dorothy, that is the heartbeat of the hotel. And for me, I always wanted it to be the meeting place and the place for people to go. If you now go in, look at the foyer there in the morning. It's full of people with tea, coffee and scones, and meeting people, meeting, and also in Dots Bar. I think one of the highlights for me going back was I was in the bar one day. There was a lady alongside me on the phone, and her phone rang, and all she said to the other lady or whoever phoned her was, "I'm in the Rose." And that was it. She hung up the phone and I said, "You know what? I think we've almost made it here."
Sean, Rose involvements, not just the hotel, during the festival, stewarding, meeting, tour guiding.
We came to town just over 30 years ago, and the festival was really spectacular at that stage. The first Sunday of the festival, we went down to the park. Just a few months previously, we had paid a small fortune to see Phil Coulter in Sydney. But Phil Coulter was on stage free in the town park. And the other side was Liam Clancy. And another place was Dina, Dale Hayes and the Champions. All free. We could not get over it. I did some street volunteering. I was looking after the kids' stuff in Pierce Park for a while. And, it brought such immense joy to the town, but it brought immense finances as well. Like, the economic boost that it brought over the years is just unbelievable.
Is there a particular ambition for the literary evenings in the months and years ahead?
Well, Mark is very supportive, and Nashling, of course, and Eileen. Dick, God rest him, he was the main mover at the start. Like, Dick used to tune in online watching the evenings here. And we'd certainly like to keep them going. I'd like it to be a mixture of, we'll say, nationally known, like Donal Ryan. And recently now we had a young woman, Deirdre Lade, who has a magnificent book called Shipwrecked for Kids, about various shipwrecks around the world. And Tanya Farley, who's based in Castle Island. So what I'd like to see is that mixture of national and local, because it's, I know myself, you know, from publishing, it's very, very difficult out there. It's very difficult to flog the books.
Yeah.
But to give people the opportunity here, and in such a lovely setting as well,
yeah.
I think the authors really, really appreciate it.
Once a month, is it?
It varies. This year now, I think we had it a little bit later for various reasons. But it's usually in the autumn when people, you know, it's dark and people are looking for something to do. It's free. You can come in, get yourself a cup of coffee or a drink or whatever, and just listen to somebody talk about how they write, why they write, do some readings from their books and so on. It's a lovely, lovely couple of hours.
Yeah, fantastic. Mark, final word. How will the Rose Hotel's 10th birthday in April be marked?
Radio Kerry will be front and centre around our celebrations. The details are to be confirmed, but all national schools in Kerry will run a competition, we'll announce the winners, and then we're obviously going to have the outside broadcast unit, but we're going to have a lot of offers. Everything will revolve around 10. So there'll be 10 prizes, there'll be 10 of everything. And if I could add just on the literary evenings, just to add a connection from the hotel, Emma Larkin, when I came here, Emma had been the financial controller of the hotel. She was, up until 4 years ago, the financial controller. But she wrote a series of books, Izzy's Adventures. It's based around Gaelic football. So actually, it was a very proud moment for us to have somebody who worked in the hotel and to be sitting on stage with Sean talking about her books.
Sean's launch here was something of an event as well, the launch of his recent memoir.
Yeah, Sean, you had Dick Spring on the top table with you. Sean presented Eileen and Franz and Amber Hengler with a copy of his book. Sean is an absolute legend, and I think everything he's involved with, he's a quiet man, but he does so much work. Literary Evenings is a small part of Sean's life, which he does extremely well, and we're delighted to be associated with Sean and this. He's a wonderful, wonderful man, and he won't tell you half the stuff he does.
Mark, thanks indeed for talking to us.
Thank you.
Through the valley of memories were shedding when I won the heart of the Rose of Folly.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across Kerry. Enjoy a simple, healthy and easy dinner solution with Quinlan's fresh, ready-made seafood meals. Available in store.
The moon through the valley of pale rays were shedding when I won the heart of the Rose of...
Sean Lyon's special places in and around Tralee. We're now at the entrance to the Tralee Ship Canal at Blennerville, where we're joined by consultant ecologist Noel Mulligan, who on behalf of the Tralee Rowing Club has done a series of ecology and biodiversity projects on the Tralee Ship Canal, bringing kids on sponsored walks for years and raised funds over 30,000 to date.
We used to walk from Holy Family out as far as Blennerville, and at a stretch we called it a 10k walk, and by the time we did a few corners and crossed a few streets, it was close enough to the 10Ks. But every walk was memorable, because we'd be walking along the canal and looking over at the mountains, and we used to stop there just before the bridge, and I'd climb up on the bench and I'd talk to the kids about what it was like and what it must have been like, you know, when the likes of the Jeannie Johnson and the various coffin ships were here, and that the people were going along the canal in the boats, in the barges, heading for the ships. And I used to say to them, can you just imagine what it must be like for somebody beyond the hills there who was born and brought up there, and to be going down along the canal, looking at those hills and realising that they'd never see them again.
Yeah.
Like, we have to remember where we came from. We have to remember our own history. And the lads used to enjoy it. No, they enjoyed being away from school, obviously.
Nobody ever fell into the canal.
We got close once or twice. Once or twice. God, you've brought me out in a cold sweat now when I think of one particular messer that tried to go in after a swan. And fortunately, I was behind him. I caught him by the scruff of the neck.
Noel, to quote yourself, I'm an ecologist, and my interest in canal were sparked by the appearance of an invasive alien species.
With regard to invasive species, non-native species or aliens, you don't really get concerned unless they're invasive. When I came here first, the canal was a place which had a tidal effect because there was no gates, and then they cleaned it out. Magnificent job. Wonderful. Our canal, belonging to the people of the town, managed by the county council, and then they created this magnificent amenity. And lo and behold, I was down here one day about 8 years ago, looked over the side, as I always do, just to see what's in the water. It's my nature. Yeah. And I spotted this unusual creature, discovered that it was an invasive alien species called the Australian tube worm. It's there in the billions. It's confined to the canal. It doesn't get outside the canal. I did a significant study at the time, the first study sponsored by LawPro, yeah, to see what the ecology of the canal was like, and it was wonderful. The number of, there's other invasive species in there as well, or aliens, I should say, but they're not invasive.
But is there a particular effect this is having on native species?
The species itself filters the water, and what it does, in effect, is it filters material that it uses for food, but also any silt. That silt then is deposited on the bottom, so the effect clean the water.
So it's a positive effect?
It's positive from that point of view. It's the kind of thing that if I was rowing a boat, and if I had a boat to draw up against the pier, and the pier is covered with this invasive species, it has the same effect on my boat as sandpaper. So the guys in the rowing club have to be very careful, because their boats have to be super clean and smooth. So if the canal water has something in it that's damaging their boats, they watch out for it. But they're in control of that. They are fully aware of what they need to do, yeah, to avoid damage. So, and on balance, this invasive species here has no effect here, but it's found elsewhere in the country in similar locations.
You were saying there just before we started to record that if it got out into the bay, it could do a lot of harm.
Well, here we've got, we're looking out in the bay, the most magnificent view. Wonderful. You've got here, and what's out there below the surface of the water when the tide is in is the famous Tralee Bay oyster, yeah, fishery, yeah, run by the Tralee Bay Oyster Society. That is the best oyster fishery in the country. It's the native oyster. It has a few little species there that maybe shouldn't be there. If this got out there, we don't know what effect it would have. But the thing is, this species prefers brackish water, a mixture of salt and fresh water. That's fully saline out, yeah, there, so it hasn't managed to get out. I don't think it will.
Indeed. Sean, you're chair of Tralee International Resource Centre, as we've said already. This part of Tralee Bay, forever associated with the Jenny Johnson emigrant ship, your third world experience over many years and the conditions of so many Irish emigrants over the 19th century, is there a parallel?
A few years ago, I was involved in a project in the Gambia in West Africa. People are leaving Gambia in their absolute thousands, young people, to get to Europe. They go by what's called the back road, and the back road takes them through the desert to Libya, from there hopefully to Europe. One time when I was there, the local paper, the Gambia Times, there was a picture of a young woman. She was the goalkeeper for the international soccer team, and she had drowned in the Mediterranean trying to cross after completing the back road. But the image of the coffin ships, I know we have to be careful with history, but there is no doubt, you know, that there are thousands of people who are just simply discarded on the way over across the Atlantic. Like, that's what, 140, 50 years ago? It's a direct parallel, you know, that people being lost in the sea, just trying to escape to a better life. And this young lady was only 23.
Your memoir looks on your story seriously and with humour.
The Stranger Walking the Roads.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've always found it difficult to take life too seriously, but every now and again, you know, something does come up, like that poor young woman that I read about in Gambia.
Yeah.
And there are times, you know, when you just have to look at life and, you know, just smile. We used to travel by bus a lot in Zambia, and you could be on the bus for 24, 28 hours. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, the bus would be driving through the jungle. It was actually quite flatlands as you came closer to the city, and there was there was elephant grass growing either side of the road, and the elephant grass would grow to what, maybe 10 feet. But when it was at its highest, the farmers or the villagers, they'd set fire to the elephant grass just to make the land that little bit more fertile. Yeah. And you'd be driving on the bus through these flames, but every couple of hours the bus would pull over to the side of the road, and the driver would say, pee-pee stop, ladies to the left, gentlemen to the right.
Noel, you followed up your studies with a biodiversity action plan with Tralee Rowing Club that established that the canal is a gateway to biodiversity.
Two nature reserves, 5 special areas of conservation, and 3 special protection areas for birds. And literally, we've got those within a walk of the centre of the town.
One of the reasons I became very disillusioned with teaching, actually, shortly before I retired, got to the stage where the curriculum was so strict and there was no room left for imagination or storytelling.
Noel, a professor in the MTU, bring real life into it. And
absolutely. One of the programs that I was associated with was the wildlife biology course. That course was one where the students spend an awful lot of time out in the nature, on the environment out here. And I mean, what a better place, national park on the seashore. And it was actually the practice as opposed to the theory is what they engaged with. Yeah. And then the theory made sense. A good storyteller is somebody that actually can engage people. And if you've got people engaged, you can teach them Irish and maths and reading and writing all through whatever it is that floats their boat.
Story. I mean, you followed up on the Community Biodiversity Action Plan with an implementation project.
We were involved helping people to understand what it is we have here on our doorstep. The implementation was one which took place during the period. It was a number of walks and exhibitions and engagement with different age groups and talks.
Listening to Noel speak there with such passion and authority is fantastic. And one of the things that we used to do on the sponsored walks is, as the kids were going along, to let them look into the water and what can they see in there. Every year we do different projects, like going out to Cockleshell Road for Clean Up Day, or Cockleshell Beach, and cleaning all the rubbish and so on. I used to teach them reduce, reuse, repair, recycle, and rescue the planet, really. The pristine view that you have where we're standing today of the canal, of the mountains, of the shore, of the windmill and so on. Like, I think it is a way to inspire people that there is, you know, we have, what did Shakespeare say, a jewel more precious than all his tribe. And I think there's something so precious, and areas like this can underline it for everybody, the need to hold on with what we have.
Noel?
To give you a sense of what I found interesting, I would have read that book on Blenderville, The Gateway to Tralee.
Yeah.
And it gave me an insight into what the canal was about, where it came from. We all remember Griffith, the guy who did the valuation of Ireland. He was involved in the design of the canal in the first instance. And his plan was that it would be what's called an impounded canal, typical to what you would find. Water coming in from a freshwater resource and lock gates then, which would open and close to allow ships in and out. He discovered that the water he was hoping to get from the Ballymullen era was being used by two companies, both of them involved in the business of brewing and distilling. Ferguson was one and Grant was the other. But anyway, the distillery was producing 70,000 gallons of whiskey a year in 18 whatever. Up to that time, there was about 12,000 distilleries in Ireland. And then the whole whiskey industry changed. Scotland took off, and we know what Scotch whiskey has by way of reputation. Ireland is just coming back. Anyway, the canal then was started. George IV granted the permission. Griffith did the design. It took them 14 years to start, from 1832 to 1846, and we know what was happening around then. Stonemasons did a magnificent job. The wonderful work that was done by the local authority to dredge it out and prepare it for the Jeannie Johnson project at that time was what gave us what we've got today. One other thing that they did was they actually did a big job on the canal road. The road was built originally as a towpath and for people with ass and carts going west. But then it obviously has been used by articulated lorries, and it was suddenly discovered to be collapsing and falling in. Yeah. Did a major job on it. I always remember when I was young, if you had a jumper and a stitch pulled, your mother was very quick to get in there, because a stitch in time saved nine. There's a number of patches up along the canal where the stone armour, there are these stones that protect the sides, which are just mud, from being washed away. Some of those, a few of those stitches have been removed and need to be replaced. And better done now than in 10 years' time. It's going to cost tens of thousands.
Yeah. Noel, thanks a million.
The moon through the valley of pale rays were shedding when I won the heart of the rose of
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across Kerry. Take the fear out of fish and chat to our fishmongers about how to add delicious, easy-to-cook seafood into your menu. Oven and air fryer ready meals available.
The moon through the valley of pale rays were shedding when I won the heart of the rose.
Today on the Trail of Sean Lyons' special places in and around Tralee. This was recorded on February the 7th. For future programmes, your story on Sean or his special places, text 083 300 3300 or phone 066 712 3666. We're now in Feedit at the start of the Greenway. We're on the railway bridge that crosses over the Greenway.
where we're joined by the chair of the Finet Development Association, Mike O'Neill. Sean, you cycle the Greenway from Tralee to Finet 3 or 4 times a week and swim in Finet year round.
I started sea swimming here during the Wild Mind Festival 7 years ago. Yeah. I've been doing it ever since, and I try to swim, you know, right through the year. It's a fantastic experience, and there's a great feel-good experience to it. The bicycle, I took out my bike during COVID when they lifted the limit to 5 kilometres. It's exactly 5 kilometres from my house out to the spa. And the first day I got to the 5 kilometre limit in the spa, there was a guard. It was a day like this, beautiful day. He was leaning up on the wall of the field, sunning himself, and I was getting by after me 5 kilometres. Yeah. And he looked at me and I said, "Don't worry, Gerd, I'm not going to go beyond the 5 limit. I'm not going to go to Finet." And he didn't stir. He said to me, "Yerra," he said, "you won't get to the top of the hill."
Was winter swimming something that also coincided with that?
No, that 2019, so that would have been before COVID. And that was one of the things that frustrated me about COVID. From my house to here is 10 kilometres. To be confined, knowing that, like, there's the beautiful, pristine, cold, salt waters of the Atlantic. I mean, how much healthier would it have been for people if we were allowed to go out and cycle? I mean, the possibility of COVID surviving the cold waters of the Atlantic in December, January, yeah, February. Okay. Since COVID has lifted now, we've been out, you know, myself and Ken Quillan, we come out here most days.
Year round,
yeah, depending on the weather.
Mike, the Greenway has been a 25-year obsession for you, campaigning for 13 years, seeing the benefits for the past 12 years. On those 13 years of campaigning,
one of the most abiding memories I have is of kind of creating a community around the campaign. There was a very active group in Finet at the time, the Spa Finet Community Council, Nora Landers, Colette O'Sullivan and Dermot Crowley, and they were quite active at that time. And then I noticed somebody in Tralee was trying to set up a group on that side, so I felt if we had a sort of a pincer move where there was a group active in Tralee and a group active in Finet, that it would just up the pressure on the council to make a move on this, because it was just an asset lying idle that, yeah, needed to be revived.
Yeah. Tremendous. Sean, COVID changed your life.
It certainly did. You know, getting the bike out meant everything. Now, unfortunately, about 4 years ago, being a man of a certain age, I had to have a surgery that made sitting down difficult. I was told to spend at least 3 weeks confined to the house. I almost went crazy, you know, because I love the company, I love the chat, I love to be out and about. When the 3 weeks was up, partly because of the intrusiveness of the surgery, but partly mentally as well, I found it difficult to get back on the bike.
Yeah.
And then, as these things happen, an aunt of mine, my auntie Kitty, passed away up at home, and in her will, she left that the sale of the house be divided equally among her 29 nieces and nephews. Got a couple of grand out of that, and I decided to buy an electric bike. The Greenway and the electric bike have really transformed my life.
You must have some sort of record. You tell me 10,000 kilometres.
Yes, I was just checking there during the week. Now, I don't cycle anywhere except the Greenway. I don't take the bike into town. I'm paranoid about it getting stolen, and so I use it almost exclusively. 99.9% of the cycling has been to and from Finet. 25 kilometres from Go to Woe, if I go up as far as the statue there. I've over 10,000 kilometres done on the bike, so I reckon by mathematics I must have done about 400 trips on the Greenway. And a few years ago during the Wild Mind Festival in Finet 2024, Mike and the committee asked me if I do a poetry in motion. People got their bikes. We cycled along the Greenway and stopped every now and again to recite poetry. But amazingly, one of my favourite, if not most favourite poet is Paddy Kavanagh. When we were waiting to go there just at the very, very start, I said, "We're going to start with a poem now by Kavanagh. The bicycles go by in twos and threes. There's a dance in Billy Brennan's barn tonight." One of the guests was a young woman from Monaghan, and she said Billy Brennan was actually her uncle.
Oh, gosh.
So we had the niece of the man mentioned in Kavanagh's poem read the poem to start our poetry in motion.
Mike, Sean must be due some sort of award. I mean, has anybody else done 10,000 kilometres on the Greenway?
That's quite an achievement. And I would say it mightn't be quite mirrored, but the amount of people that have taken up cycling since the advent of the Greenway has been immense. And it's just proof positive that build it and people will come. It's been such a positive impact What I find is you'll probably see that there are people in Tralee who might cycle a certain distance out. There's people from Finet will go a certain distance in. Some, like Sean, will do the full thing. It's so democratic because you can go out with your buggy, your skateboard, your roller skates, your walking stick, you know, your wheelchair. It is just very open to everybody. The surface is very good. Full Green was only open about 3 years or 4 years, I'd say, Frank. We were campaigning for a long, long time for it to happen.
Is there a particular impact it has had that stands out for you?
You could argue that Finet has been transformed in a lot of ways. I have a business here myself and others do as well. It was the catalyst for a lot of other changes to happen in the village, I think. You can see in front of us here that there's a new shower block, there's a new cafe has been built. There's a lot of things have happened. There's a new energy about Finet. It's become a kind of a destination, is what I hear people saying all the time. So, and I think as well, it kind of, the clientele that come are people that are interested in their health. There's a nice ambience about the place.
Yeah.
It's non-intrusive. It's just beside the playground. You just hop on, hop off. And it's just become another artery in and out of Finet, into Tralee.
Was the opening of your own cafe something that followed the development of the Greenway?
No. I've been here for a long time, but it certainly has had a very positive impact. Today, for instance, is a Saturday. The park run is a huge event in Tralee in the town park on a Saturday morning. And they needed an overspill because it was actually becoming too busy. They approached the council because the council are quite strict on what they allow to happen on the Greenway in terms of events and stuff, and I can understand that. And they conceded to allowing the park run. So every Saturday morning now in Finet is the park run, and it's just been fantastic. It's been really good for me as a business. It's kind of cemented my Saturday mornings, and it creates a nice, like, we're good for them, they're good for us. So there's a nice symbiosis there.
Has it extended your season then?
Without a doubt.
Has it?
Yeah. We open all year round now, at the weekends this time of the year.
How long did you close for?
Open in May, close in September. My business has been transformed.
Sean, your cycling was curtailed, as you said a minute ago, by prostate cancer.
Gave me a great sense of my own mortality and made me realise that I do need to do things, you know. I do need to swim more, I do need to cycle more, I do need to get out more. I suppose I've developed an affinity with Finet. The last year or so now, they were doing an oral history project and I was doing the interviews, and I got to know some of the amazing stories. Like one woman we were interviewing, and her father had worked on the lifeboats. Up until 1928, the lifeboat rescue was by rowing boats.
Yeah.
Like, they only got engines in 1928.
Yeah.
And when you think of the people that did that, the people that went out into those seas, rowing out, and all volunteers, you know, just in the service of their fellow man, and they didn't actually get radios until 1932. So the fact that people could be gone, she said, the longest mission she remembers her dad going on, I think, was something like 18 hours. Yeah. So for 18 hours, for the family to be here in Finet, and the sea can get quite wild here, even though it's very sheltered. It's incredible, the history. You know, going right back, I know an area of passion for you, Frank, is St. Brendan. You know, going back to the question you asked me, you know, did the prostate issue change me? It certainly made me far more aware, and far more aware of how important it is, you know, to collect stories, to listen to stories, to hear history and to meet people and to talk to people.
Standing up here on the bridge, I mean, it really gives you a great idea of what the whole of Finet is like. Tralee Bay outside, the Samphire Rock, the mountains in the background there, way out to Brandon to the west, and the Greenway heading off to Tralee as well.
I think it was 2017, we ran a project here called Faces of Finet. I remember walking up the pier one day and I was saying to myself, 100 years ago, now it just happened to be 100 years on from the rising, but it was 100 years ago, I said, there were different people walking this very same pier, lived in this very village I'm living in, and we know very little about them. I just started thinking, I said, is there something we could do to remember those people and also to kind of mark a time now where the common denominator for everyone living here is we live in the village. And depending on where in the village you live, you have a different aspect. Some people are looking out at Mount Brandon, some people are looking towards Barrow, etc. So anyway, I approached a photographer in Finet called Jim McCarthy, and we basically photographed everybody in Finet who was willing to be photographed living at that time. We had a brilliant exhibition, but we had to go back to the census of 2011 to look at the names of the people that were living at that time, and just to see how many carried through and who didn't and where they came from and why those names. So it was just an interesting time.
Was there anything particularly interesting that came out of that?
Well, I think there was a lot of English names at that time because the RIC would have had a barracks just literally up here as that gable there, that white gable would have been an RIC barracks. And some of those people would have been here in connection with the census itself. So some of the names may not have been here that long, but overall, like there were some people, like Brown would be a strong name in Fianna, and I remember Jim Brown and his daughter coming along, and they could trace back their family a couple of generations. They found it very emotional, you know.
Yeah. Thanks indeed, Mike. Thanks for talking
to
us.
Not at all. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Through the valley the pale rays were shedding when I won the heart of the rose of folly.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Supplement your diet with a healthy and fresh dinner option. Fresh seafood from Quinlan.
The moon through the valley, the pale rays were shedding when I won the heart of the rose of folly.
On our pilgrimage to Sean Lyon's special places, now our last stop at the Kerry Cancer Support Group, where we're joined by the service manager, Breda Dyland. Kerry Cancer Support run 4 buses from Kerry to cancer treatment in Cork and Limerick. 8,000 journeys last year, annual budget of €300,000, no public funding. Breda, it's all about individual people.
It's about the unique stories behind those statistics, Frank. People come in as patients, they leave as friends and family.
Yeah.
That's what our service is about. It's about connection.
Give me the story of one individual.
The special one that stands out is the photograph I just showed you of a gentleman from North Kerry. His name was Paddy King. And he started with us many, many years ago. And he was actually with us for over 7 years. He lived in a little cottage on the side of the road on the way to Ballybunion. You know, we think we don't live in isolation anymore. But he didn't have a lot of family support. He had many, many friends who were willing to help him. But the hospital kind of recommended, I suppose, our service. But we didn't have a service running to Limerick at the time. So his consultant had seen our service because he would have been down here in the Bonds in Tralee coming to meetings. And he was in the matter private above in Limerick and had said it'd be fantastic if we could have that service that goes to Cork every day come to Limerick every day. So Paddy was our pilot patient, our poster boy for Limerick. Yeah, yeah. And he was such a character. A gentleman from out in Tarbert, he looked after his horses for him. And he would get up every morning and look after the horses before I picked him up at 7 o'clock. Yeah, yeah. And we would head to Limerick. And he had so many stories, and he had lived in England, and he had been one of those people who had immigrated and gone away and sent back money to the family. Yeah. And then came home when he was older. But I suppose the privilege was we went through his whole journey with him. It was such an honour to me because he got better, but he got sick again. He passed away during COVID, but I got to sit with him in palliative when he passed. Yeah. And I was there holding his hand. And that's what we are. You know, we can become your extended family, I suppose. I was there with two of his neighbours who were there as well, and that was such a privilege.
Yeah. As the present chairman had long-time board member of Kerry Cancer Support Group.
As everybody knows, like, there are very few families that haven't been touched by cancer. When I was growing up, my idol in the family was my Uncle John, who was a farmer, a bachelor farmer, a legend. He was supposed to have built his own hay shed, able to lift everything. And when it was sheep dipping, John was able to lift the sheep, you know, and that kind of thing. And I saw John when cancer hit, you know, to see a giant of a man being destroyed really, really hurts me to think of what cancer can do. And it's always been something I've tried to support, whether it's through collections or whatever. And then when Dan Horan invited me onto the board here, I was immensely privileged and delighted to join and then to become chair. And as Breda was talking about there, the Limerick bus, when we got the new bus there last year, I was on the inaugural trip to Limerick. Limerick Hospital at the moment, it's like a building site, you know, and the traffic around it. The security men just waved our bus right through. There was no queuing. We had parking exactly right at the door where we needed to go. And to see the reception that we got from the staff, right through from the reception staff to the nursing staff to the consultants, to see how much they respected the service that we have, and to see how happy the passengers, the patients, how relieved and relaxed they were that they didn't have to battle traffic. They had travelled on a bus where they had support. They had arrived right at the door, and when their treatment was finished, they knew they could go back, just be picked up at the door and be dropped home afterwards.
Apart from 10,000 a year from Kerry County Council, you get no government funding. So many examples of private generosity breed out.
We get from the biggest, you know, to, we had a girl towards the end of last year, she did a dance in the Gleneagle in memory of her grandfather, Jimmy from Castlemaine, who was another one of our fantastic characters. And his wife still comes to the window every morning and blows a kiss at our bus driver when he passes, you know. So, and she raised over 23,000 for the bus. That's just one example of a big one. But I visit a school in Killarney every year over in Lissagaveen, the primary school over there. Yeah. And every year the confirmation class, without fail, they give us money from their confirmation money.
Isn't that lovely?
You know, so you go from the biggest to the smallest. It doesn't matter how much. It's the recurring, the comeback every year.
Raising 300,000 every year to provide an essential service, it saps the energy.
We're fortunate that Breda and Trish, who work here in the office, have more than enough energy. I am lost in admiration for them that, you see, we're here on a Saturday and Breda is giving up her time. We have to have a meeting next week. We have to have our board meeting a little bit earlier because Breda and Trish are going to a fundraiser over in Killarney. So they put incredible work in. And one of the joys I have being involved in this particular group is going to the fundraisers, whether it's, you know, the Haddo Heights, looking out over the lakes and chatting to the people there, or a tea dance in Listowel, meeting people and chatting to people. We've just come from Phoenix, like Phoenix National School. We were their charity last year and there was a sponsored cycle, which I was on myself. The gratitude that people have, like one particular person told me that her husband is using the service, and she said, It's amazing what it does for him, but also what it does for me, she said, because I know that as long as he's on the bus, he's been looked after, he's safe. It means that I can get a few jobs done around the house, I can go shopping, I can go to the library, or I can sit and do absolutely nothing, which is such a comfort, you know, for the families, because, you know, it is difficult. There are people in the room who have been on that journey to know that people care. Indeed. People care.
Again, going back to the effect on an individual cancer patient, Breda, the lady whose family said she'd never get on a bus.
They had an awful fight with her to travel on our service because she had, like that, she'd become quite insular and during COVID and she didn't particularly want to go out or want to go for her treatment. She had stopped kind of, I suppose, socialising with people. They said, oh no, there's no way she'll come with you. And she did. She started and she came with us the first day and the second day. She finished her 5 weeks treatment with us and made couple of new friends and is now going out twice a week for coffee with these new friends.
Sean, so many years on the board, years as chairman, your fellow board members, what keeps you involved?
Everything you've listed there, a fantastic board here, each bringing a particular field of expertise, each bringing an energy, each bringing a vision. And as I said before, Breda and Trish, I know the work that they do. I recognise the work that they do. And if there's any way I can support, if that means, you know, chairing a meeting once a month or whatever, I'm prepared to do it. Also, because I'm involved and have been involved for many, many, many years with different fundraisers, I am so particular about fundraising that every penny has to be accounted for. And I know that every cent, every euro that comes in here goes directly to the service.
I think it's an important point to stress. You as chairman and all your board members are all volunteers. You're not paid or...
Absolutely not. Dan Horan was chair before me for a number of years. The night that I took over the chair, Dan took me aside and he said, "Yeah, Sean, you know, we don't claim expenses." And we don't. Like, everything we do is absolutely voluntary. If I take an afternoon to go to a fundraiser in Listowel or Killarney or wherever it is, I do that in my own time at my own expense, because it's all about giving back. And if there's any way that I can ease the journey for somebody, I'll do it.
Going to Cork or Limerick for cancer treatment, the physical demands of the medication at this time of the year when leaving and getting back is very often in the dark. Breda, what's the atmosphere on the bus like?
Going in the morning, people are quite tired, Frank. It's quiet. It's relaxed in the morning, you know. But people do chat. They talk to each other and they share their stories. And it's quite often it's nothing to do with cancer. It's everything but you know, and travelling with a family member can be different. Coming home then it can be more chatty. We've often had people with musical instruments, people who sing, people who, we've had some of the best musicians in the county, particularly from West Kerry. We had a gentleman a while ago called Lawrence Courtney. He used to play with Seamus Begley and he used to bring the squeeze box with him. And we had another gentleman at the time with a fiddle and the two of them used to rock up a session. And all sorts happen on the bus. And you know what goes on tour stays on tour, as they say. That's the most important part of it. You're keeping your independence. People feel like it's a burden and they're never a burden to their friends or family. But they feel that, and going on the bus, they're holding that independence. Yeah. They're hanging on to that one thing that they can keep control of, because cancer can take away the control. You know, you have to go to the appointments. You have to go to the treatment. You can't make decisions in regard to other things. But that's one thing you can make a decision on. You can say, I'm going on the bus.
I believe that it is in community builds society and society builds nations. To volunteer and to give back with something like the Kerry Cancer Support Group, I think it builds that community.
It is amazing, though, isn't it, that government don't... Evan Casey used to have an expression, you know, that it's up to the voluntary to identify the need, but then it should be taken on by the statutory.
I agree completely. I think it borders on the farcical that, Breda has to go, or Trish, or myself, or Dan, or whomever, all over the county, and not begging by any means, but accepting the gift that's given with such love and such affection and such respect, and providing such a service. In our lifetime, we've served 70,000 appointments. Every one of those 70,000 appointments was done because of the tea dance in Listowel, or because of the tractor run in Abbeydourney, or because of the dance in the INEC.
Breda, thanks indeed for talking to us.
You're very welcome.
The special presence of Sean Lyons, a man who's given so much in so many ways, as the MC of Tralee, as a teacher, so many community involvements. Tralee is indebted to you, and indeed to your family, to Chloe and to Maeve, and your son's name.
Cullen.
Should remember that. So many helps in so many different ways. You're an example to all of us. Special thanks to all of those who talked with us this morning. Location Sound and Programme Coordinator Siobhan Lewis, greatly recovering from her recent surgery, post-production, Brendan Lewis. And I should, of course, again mention Sarah Ryan, who was helping us with lifting and indeed introducing and so on and so forth. Me, Frank Lewis, until the last Saturday in March, the 28th, when we'll travel to more special places. Now to play us out. You have a special request, Sean. You want DJ Curtin to sing The Rose of Tralee.
Above the green mountain, the sun was declining. Beneath the blue sea, as I strayed with my love through the pure crystal fountain that stands in the beautiful vale of Tralee.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Because at least one day of the weekend should involve someone else doing all the cooking. Order your delicious takeaway from Quinlan's today.